please make sure that you're going to Smirconish.com not only to vote on today's survey question, which is the following: the LA Dodgers opening a fully vaccinated fan section where masks are required but not social distancing. Heavy voting already on this. Is it a necessary incentive or too heavy-handed? And no hitting and running. You can't just go vote on the survey question without reading not only my hand-selected aggregated links, but some excellent exclusive content. Thank you, Leslie DeFrancesca, former president of a general contracting firm in California, who co-authored an article for Smirconish.com with a conservative colleague arguing that California's strict lockdown measures would do more harm than good. And today, she's reflecting on a year of COVID-19 restrictions and outlines the economic and social harm lockdowns have brought to California and beyond. It tacks a similar thought process to that which law professor, my good friend, the noted trial attorney Shane Inspector, offered within the last week. And then there's Rich Tao, who writes for Smirconish.com and begins his essay the following. You know Rich Tao. He's the president of Engageus, a many-time visitor to this program and my CNN program, mostly discussing his focus groups that he's done with swing voters in swing areas for the last several years. Rich begins this way. Imagine you're in charge of planning Joe Biden's 2024 presidential campaign. Sure, the election is 42 months away, but just imagine you're in charge. You need to ensure the people who put you over the top the last time in key swing states such as Georgia, Arizona, Wisconsin are going to stick with you. Separately, now imagine you're a Republican strategist similarly looking at November 2024. You want to flip those states back into the presidential column, having lost each one by less than one percentage point in 2020. The task seems doable with the right candidate and right message. In both cases, who are you most concerned about persuading? Among them have to be the people who voted for Donald Trump in 2016 and then flipped to Joe Biden last year. These folks could easily bail on Biden and go back to the Republicans if President Biden doesn't deliver or delivers in a wrong way. Which brings us to the topic of infrastructure and swing state Trump to Biden voters. This is Rich Tao. So, Rich, who were you thank you, by the way, for being back. Who were you interviewing most recently? Give me the setup.
So the setup is we had 13 Trump to Biden voters from states such as Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Texas, Minnesota, Michigan. And we interviewed them on April 13th in two different focus groups, one group of six, one group of seven, all done via Zoom.
Seems like you're now in a routine, given the pandemic, and I'm sure you're eager to get back out on the road, where every month you're conducting these focus groups with people who are swing voters in swing areas and doing them remotely.
I have been doing them remotely, and honestly, being able to do them remotely means I get people from different states together at the same time, which I think is actually an advantage over a disadvantage.
Sure. So the particular focus for this focus group was infrastructure?
Infrastructure. We also talked about cancel culture.
Mm-hmm. I like both. Both are hot. What did you learn?
So on transportation, of the 13 people, eight of them said that America's infrastructure needs immediate attention, but only six of them said they supported President Biden's plan. And I can tell you that a lot of them didn't know terribly much about that plan. And there were really three things that they said were incredibly important to them about this about the way it's handled. 11 of the 13 said that whatever deal is done in Congress has to be bipartisan. In terms of who's paying for it, none of them want to incur more debt. They think a country has too much debt, and they're very concerned about it. They want to let wealthy individuals and large corporations pay for it. 12 of the 13 said that. And all 13 of them said something I thought was particularly interesting, is that none of them think that President Biden has done a good job of explaining how this bill is going to be paid for.
You know, I wonder, and you'll know the answer, whether the Republican talking point, and just because it's a talking point doesn't mean that it isn't true, the talking point of this has nothing to do, or a large part of this has nothing to do with infrastructure. For example, childcare gets thrown into this mix. What do they think about that?
So what's interesting was I started the conversation by asking, well, what do you think of when you think of infrastructure?
Right.
And so it was an open-ended question. I didn't prompt them. And I heard the things that typically Republicans describe as infrastructure, roads, bridges, broadband, sewers, that type of stuff. And then I asked them later in the session, I said, is housing infrastructure? And they all kind of, you could tell, even though it was through Zoom, I could see they were a little quizzical in their look on their faces. And they all said that they did think, yeah, things like housing were infrastructure. So, but I didn't push them on sort of the larger things, that are really in doubt when it comes to typical definitions of infrastructure. But I was surprised that a couple of them went to things like broadband, that they didn't think of them as sort of large construction projects that were, you know, tearing apart streets and building bridges and that type of stuff. So I think they had at least a somewhat broader than typical a willingness to accept things as infrastructure. But for them, the overall price tag was really the thing that got to them.
If you were calling the White House and saying, here's what I've learned, what would be at the top of your list?
At the top of the list would absolutely be President Biden. These folks have not heard how you intend to pay for this. And if you don't tell them how it's going to be paid for, they're going to think they're paying for it, and they're not going to be happy.
And if you were calling Mar-a-Lago, you would be saying what?
I'd be saying exactly the same thing. They don't know how Biden's going to pay for it. Raise doubts.
So the subject of cancel culture, I was talking earlier in the program about the ongoing controversies in New York City among these privileged private schools and teachers or administrators or parents in one case who have spoken out and said, you know, we've gone too far in a woke direction. What are you learning from individuals who voted for Donald Trump in 2016, then voted for Joe Biden in 2020 on the so-called cancel culture issue?
Well, a lot of stuff. Very simply, I asked them what the definition of woke was, and they were all over the place. Some could give a workable definition the way it's used in the media. Some of them could not. In terms of cancel culture, none of them said that they had been personally canceled. Only about six people could give a workable definition of cancel culture, and those definitions went in all different directions. Some were more on target than others. Only five of them say that American culture is under assault by progressives. And then what I did was I wanted to understand what they saw as sort of a legitimate cancellation versus bogus cancellation. So I gave them a list of seven items. We put them up on the screen one by one and read the descriptions to them of these examples of where liberals had supposedly canceled conservatives. And we found that two of them were particularly troubling. One was the San Francisco School District taking the names, or attempting to, because it didn't actually happen. Yeah, Lincoln and Washington and Jefferson off of the buildings. 10 out of the 13 said that was very troubling to them. And eight of them said trying to cancel Dr. Seuss and having six of his books no longer available was troubling to them. There was one woman in the group who talked about Dr. Seuss. And she had this interesting comment, which was basically, Dr. Seuss is dead, but I feel fairly certain that Dr. Seuss was not trying to alienate any groups or had any political motivation in writing those books, and I don't think they harm anyone. And that really got to the larger point, is when something that was legitimate in the past and sort of was a settled thing of literature or of history, to go and try to relitigate it, that's what they found troubling in terms of cancel culture. What they didn't find troubling in cancel culture were people carping about being canceled or saying things that were ridiculous. So only two of the 13 said that the Fox News hosts, like Hannity and Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, their complaints that they're being canceled all the time, that is not to them legitimate in terms of cancel culture objection. Mike Lindell saying things about the election right before Trump left office and having 20 advertisers bail on him. To them, that's not cancel culture. That's Lindell saying or doing something they thought was, again, ridiculous. And Gina Carano making this analogy between Republicans in 2021 and Jews in Nazi Germany, they just thought that was preposterous and frankly offensive.
So I'm taking away from Rich Tao, the president of Engage, just based on your most recent focus group with Trump to Biden voters, swing voters in swing areas. I'm taking away that the cancel culture issue as a wedge issue might play well with the Republican base, but it doesn't seem to be a great igniter with these people. Fair?
Yeah, it's fair. It's got to be a pretty egregious example
right.
for them to get bent out of shape.
Yeah, understood. Did immigration come up?
We hit immigration in March. We didn't circle back on it this month.
So what is next for you? Where will the people be that you'll next gather? Where will they be from?
They'll be from the 10 most competitive swing states again, a mix of those states. And the next groups are May 11th. And I should mention that Schlesinger Group is the organization who's co-organizing this with us and does all the recruiting and finds these people around the United States. They're a focus group recruiting firm and been an amazing partner for
us. I know, Rich, that this news cycle has been on fire and just changes hour to hour, much less day to day. As of today, I would imagine you want to get into the whole policing issues controversy.
We do. I did ask about George Floyd and the Derek Chauvin trial before the verdict came down.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting that there were some people who were watching very closely and had been paying a lot of attention to the trial. There were other people who were basically not paying much attention at all. But the ones who were watching were deeply emotionally moved by the experience of watching it and hearing the testimony.
Well, I guess that would have been a little tip of the hand in terms of which way that case was going to turn out.
Perhaps, yes.
Rich Tao, thank you for the essay. Thank you, more importantly, for the conversation. I really appreciate it. What you wrote is in my Twitter feed right now, and it's still posted at smirconish.com and was in the newsletter. So I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Michael. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you, Rich. Rich talks about cancel culture, and I saw, TC, that Brett Favre, for those of us who remember the movie, damn, was that good.
I always stop and watch it.
So, like TC After Dark, he too has a podcast.
Everyone has a podcast.
And, you know, maybe got him, according to that story that I published today from USA Today at smirconish.com, getting himself in a political position, causing a little bit of controversy himself. So, yeah, there's that.
So, and if you want to see what Michael's talking about, at smirconish.com and in the smirconish.com newsletter, the headline was, Brett Favre says it's, quote, hard to believe Derek Chauvin meant to kill George Floyd. I find it hard to believe, and I'm not defending Derek Chauvin in any way, I find it hard to believe, first of all, that he intentionally meant to kill George Floyd.
Listen, the hell with Brett Favre. What does TC After Dark have queued up? Because it is Thursday.
Well, Michael, I don't usually do this. I think we've overlapped maybe twice, maybe three times in my 47 episodes. But I interviewed Michael Moss on his new book, Hooked: Food, Free Will, and How the Food Giants Exploit Our Addictions. And I did it a little differently than you because I take this book very personally. And I talked about my relationship with food, which I don't, you know, you didn't get into as much, even though you did hold up the Pop-Tarts. I think, I don't know if you're as affected by food as I am.
Oh, I'm affected.
If that makes sense.
Oh, I'm affected. I started the program today telling you that I'm fully vaccinated.
Right.
And I then explained the conversation that I had with a friend who told me he doesn't have any intention of getting vaccinated, and I won't repeat what I said. Now let me tell you something I didn't share at the outset.
Oh.
I'm in my doctor's office. I have not, since COVID began.
Were the sleeves rolled up?
I have not had a physical. And when I had the second shot.
They weigh 12 pounds heavier. You know
they
that,
say,
right?
Hey, stick around. Oh, do they?
Yeah, totally.
So they said, you know, you got to hang out for 15 minutes. And I said, oh, great. You know, hey, I should go get my blood drawn because I haven't. I love when you get your blood drawn and then you go in and you have a physical and they give you the results of
sure.
the blood. Instead of when you're there, they draw the blood. Now you've gone home and you don't have the benefit of the conversation. You follow?
I do.
So can you give me a script to have my blood drawn? Sure. Here you go. Hey, as long as I'm here today, why don't you take my blood pressure? Okay, we'll take your blood. Fine. You want to take your blood? Are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. I just, like, I'm here. We have to kill 15 minutes. So I then said, hey, I'm here. Why don't I turn my head and, no, I didn't do that. But I said, do you mind if I get on your scale?
What is wrong with... Okay,
to come...
Michael,
wait, I'm coming back to TC After Dark.
Stop. You. There is no one in the world that would volunteer to get on a doctor's scale?
So,
no one, what,
so
what is
yesterday,
wrong with you?
So yesterday, ugh, to your point with your big podcast episode with Michael Moss, I got on the scale yesterday, and I am at this minute, I believe to be, what do you think I'm about to say?
The lightest you've ever been.
The heaviest I've ever been in my recorded life.
Wow.
So what am I doing with all this Peloton activity?
Because
I mean, I was on with Leanne yesterday for 30 minutes after I rode for 10 minutes. I came home from the doctor, okay, not because of having weighed in where I weighed in, mm-hmm, but just because this is the time of my day where I work out. So I rode for 10 minutes, and I then did a ride with her, which was, I frankly didn't even listen because I was trying to watch the Columbus, Ohio shooting case.
Sounds like you were really invested in your workout.
No, but I was working out and I was watching the police briefing, which was perfect because the 30 minutes with Leanne just flew by.
Okay, you and I have had this conversation before,
yes,
but somehow
it's
what
you eat and drink.
It is 98%. I swear. Actually, Michael Moss and I discuss it, and I said 98%, and you can listen and see whether he agrees with that percentage. I believe that 98% of weight management is through calories in, period.
So you're telling me, hey, Michael, if you weren't working out, is this what you're saying? If you weren't working out, you'd have had an even bigger shock yesterday.
No, your workout has nothing to do with how much you weigh.
Okay, why am I working out?
For your heart health and strength.
My heart's fine. I pulled a good DNA hand.
Fine. Stop working out.
Okay,
cut what you're eating in half and you'll lose weight. I saw someone yesterday that you and I both know, Ben X.
Mm-hmm.
He has lost almost 30 pounds. He looks amazing.
How'd he do it?
It's been since December. It's 100% what he eats. It has nothing. He is not. He wanted
he's,
to.
But he's probably like Frank
he
Luntz.
Wanted to
he's
take
walking
out,
around miserable.
No, he's not. He's phenomenal. Totally bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I was so impressed. He wanted to take out the variables. He wanted to see if what I said is true.
Hmm.
And he has not worked out since December. And he looks fantastic.
Hmm.
He's going to add it back in because, you know, heart health. But
where is this podcast available?
This podcast is available wherever you get your pods.
What about the SiriusXM app?
On the SiriusXM app. You can actually ask Alexa, say, play TC After Dark, and boom, it'll pop right up.
She'll know what I'm talking about.
She'll know what you're talking about.
What if I tell her a few more things?
You can. She knows.
ladies and gentlemen, give TC some play, please, wherever you get your podcast. Michael Moss, her guest in the episode that has just dropped. Maybe we'll do like a jelly bean competition for my weight.
Oh, how appropriate. Jelly beans.
Right?
Like, this is the problem with you.
As long as
what
they
is
sit
wrong
on,
with you?
As long as they sit on my desk.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you so much. Visit my YouTube page. See you tomorrow.